It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Matinee Talk with Julian and Johnny. I am one of your hosts, Johnny Lightfoot, and with me as always,
Julian Owens.
We're here another nice morning here in Austin, Texas. Another new episode of Matinee Talk. Today we'll be going over the recently announced Oscar nominations. Along with that, we'll be deep diving into our Glass reviews. But before we get to that, let's look at this weekend's box office.
So this weekend, the numbers are pretty good for at least Glass with its first opening weekend with over $40 million, which for an opening weekend for M. Night Shyamalan movie, that's really good.
That is really good.
And then second on this list for its second week in a row, The Upside is at number two, only a 26% drop off with $15 million.
Not bad. Considering the negative press he's been getting lately.
I was just about to say that. Despite all the negative press that Kevin Hart's been getting, he is still doing well in the box office. It has over $43 million domestically, so he's still trucking. And then for number four, we have Aquaman with $10 million with its fifth week, and that brings its gross for domestically over $300 million.
And it has passed $1 billion.
It's first, yeah. It's first DCEU movie to hit over $1 billion. And last but not least, coming in. Coming in at number four. I was right. Sorry, Aquaman 3. No. Sorry, guys. I'm terrible with math today. Yeah, number four. We have Dragon Ball Super Broly at $9 million.
That just shows how crazy the Dragon Ball fandom is. Like, they will go, like, if you put it in the theater, they will come.
And you know what's scary? I'm one of those fans. I went to go see it opening weekend on Wednesday, which is also, like, saw it in IMAX. Go watch it in IMAX if you get a chance.
Yeah, I'm going this afternoon at 12:15. I can't wait because I mean, that's one of my things, just growing up, was the Dragon Ball. As much of a film fan as I am, and I love the purity of film and cinema, I cannot ignore the Dragon Ball.
And I will say, like I told him, I enjoyed it. This is the best Dragon Ball movie in quite a long time, so definitely go check it out. And then rounding out with number five, we have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with $7 million. It's, wow, domestic is only $158 million. I didn't know it was that low in domestic, but all right, cool, never mind. But otherwise, great week in the box office.
Cool. And again, we're still in slow period of news time. Still. And we won't see a lot of breaking stories coming out until probably closer to after the Oscars. But the one newsworthy thing of note is that Edgar Wright is set to be working on a psychological horror film taking place in London, also working on a Baby Driver sequel. So I think Edgar Wright horrors sounds pretty cool. He says it'll be in the veins of Don't Look Now and Roman Polanski's Repulsion as influences. So those are two films that are looking at it as influences. I'm excited to see what Edgar Wright does. I can't think of anything he's done that I don't enjoy.
I was just thinking about that. Like, Edgar Wright has been one of the most consistent directors out there. Like, every movie, even though some of them are like not typical genre movies, they're all like some spin of genre movies, like Shaun of the Dead, At World's End, all of those, and you're like, every single one of them has been enjoyable. And like, hey, Edgar Wright's making two more movies, I'm down to watch them. I'd love that.
Anywho, let's dive into our main topics. So the Oscar nominations were just announced this morning.
Yeah, first thing this morning.
Anything stick out to you? Or do you want to go down the list?
We can go down the list, because the thing is, there's a couple of things I would like to talk about. That's what I was going to say. There's a couple of things that stick out for me that we definitely need to speak about. But yeah, let's go down the list. We're gonna start basically
Best Picture.
Yeah, I guess we'll start with Best Picture. So for Best Picture, we have Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice. I have questions.
Mm-hmm.
So again, personal opinion. I loved Black Panther. I love Black Panther. Best Picture nod. I don't know. Like, I love the movie. I love its cultural significance. I love the meanings, the different themes and all that. But Best Picture nod, eh. Again, I finally got to see about 80% of Vice before I had to leave to come back to Austin from Beaumont. I wasn't too thrilled. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Adam McKay, it was good, but it was just like
it was disjointed.
Yes.
The editing was really choppy.
And so that's what I was like, Best Picture? Yeah. And I feel like we talked about it before, Bohemian Rhapsody, I don't think it's Best Picture nod.
Mm-hmm.
The only movie that I feel like got snubbed in this also is If Beale Street Could Talk. I think that was one that I feel like really got snubbed. But other than that, every other movie like Roma, Star Is Born, Black Klansman, The Favorite, like, looks good. I think Star Is Born or Roma is going to be the one to pick the Best Picture.
Yeah, I think it's either going to be Roma, or A Star Is Born, or Green Book, because Green Book just won the Producers Guild Award for Best Picture, which is a lot of times a telltale sign of
who's going to win.
Who's going to win the Oscar? So we'll see. Next on the line is Best Director. We have Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favorite, Spike Lee for Black Klansman, Adam McKay for Vice, Paweł Pawlikowski for Cold War. So I have not seen Cold War. No, that's the one of these I cannot see. I do think even out of the four that I did see, I am wondering where Bradley Cooper is on that.
I was going to ask, why is Bradley Cooper not on this list? It's pretty interesting to see that he is not on the list, but
it's out of these, who do you think probably has the best shot? I think probably Alfonso.
Yeah, I was going to say Cuarón go in. I think Caronzo, and if they try to be progressive like they were not last year but 2 years beforehand, I think Spike Lee might win it.
Okay.
Because it's been, he hasn't won one, and he has so many great films out there, so they might just be like, okay, because we're being progressive, we're going to give him a Oscar. But that's just my opinion on that.
All right, what's next?
You want to do Best Animated Feature?
Best Animated Feature.
Incredibles 2, Isle of Dogs, I Can't Mariah, and then Ralph Breaks the Internet and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Out of all of these, I thought all of these would be nominated, and of course I think Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is definitely going to win the Best Animated Feature for this one. And then what's interesting to me real quick is because now Roma is now nominated for Best Picture instead of Best Foreign Picture. It's still nominated for Best Foreign Picture. So you got Capernaum, Cold War, Never Look Away, Roma, and Shoplifters. I hate to say it, because Roma is nominated for Best Picture, I think it's going to win Best Foreign.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing with this, and again, a couple of these foreign films I have not seen. However, I'm very disappointed that Korea did not get its first foreign film nomination for Burning, because it was on the short list. And it should have made it, because that is such a phenomenal film, Burning. And it's a film that actually did get limited distribution here in the States. So I don't know why it didn't get nominated.
I was like I told you, it was premiering in Austin's Film Festival for like 2 weeks, and then it was in LA with my friends that I saw. I was talking to over the break. 2 weeks as well, and I'm surprised that it's not on the list. But again, there's a like I said, there's a lot of snubs on this list. That's why I'm like pretty interested to see then let's go to best original song. So for best original song, I did All of the Stars, I'll Fly by RBG, The Place Where Lost Things Go for Mary Poppins, Shallow, When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs for Wings for Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. Of course, I think Shallow's going to be in this.
Yeah.
All right, real quick. In my opinion, I don't think Shallow's the best song on that album, on that soundtrack.
Really?
No, I don't think so. I think, personally, just because I guess it weighs more emotion for me, it's the final song that Lady Gaga performs at the end.
Okay.
But, again, my personal opinion, I love Shallow, don't get me wrong, but I think for best original song, I think that song should have been in there. But it's neither here or there. Then we go from that to best original score, Black Klansman, Black Panther, If Bill Street Could Talk, Isle of Dogs, and Mary Poppins Returns. This is the one that's very interesting. Again, Justin Hurwitz, where is he? Mm-hmm. I think he should have been nominated for First Man, but, you know.
All right. Yeah, I really thought First Man was going to get, like, I didn't think it was going to get any of the directing or acting or any of that, but I really felt like it was going to get, like, all of the sound.
Right, and it's nominated for Best Sound Mixing and Best Sound Editing, which we called, but it's just Best Original Score you didn't get? That's a little weird. Okay. But I think, I don't know. It's either going to go to Black Panther or If Bill Street Could Talk. All right. I think.
Let's go into the acting categories. Yeah. So, Best Actress, I was really surprised with the Yalitza Aparicio. For Roma.
Yeah.
Because, again, like I said when we talked about Roma, it's so hard to judge an acting nomination based on, or performance based on a language I don't speak.
Right.
And then from there, we have Glenn Close,
Olivia Colman,
Lady Gaga, Melissa McCarthy. Really, I am proud of Melissa McCarthy for turn it around and actually doing something to give herself a little more range and a little more credit as an actor, as opposed to always just doing these silly goof movies.
Have you seen it?
I have not, but I've heard her performance is amazing.
Yeah.
In terms of what I see on here, I go Olivia Colman.
I think it's going to be Olivia Colman, but also, this is a thing that I was talking to, I was listening to a podcast on the other day. Everybody keeps thinking Glenn Close, because for the Screen Actors Guild, it was a tie between Glenn Close and Lady Gaga for Best Actress. So everybody's thinking it'd be one of those two.
Yeah.
Like Olivia Colman looks like she's going to be the for sure winner.
Well, she won the Golden Globe.
Golden Globes won. Right. That's what I'm saying. Olivia Colman seems like she's going to be the for sure winner, but like a podcast was saying, don't fall asleep on Glenn Close and Lady Gaga. It might go to them, but so far I think, yeah, Olivia's going to win.
And then what do we got for best actor?
We got Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, William Dafoe, Rami Malek, and Viggo Mortensen.
Okay, I got to say, with this list, if what happens at the Golden Globes happen with this, don't get me wrong, Rami Malek, you were great, but in this list, You are not there.
That's what I'm saying. You don't have a chance, my friend.
Like, it's got to be either Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper.
I would say maybe William Dafoe.
Willem.
That's the three I would put in as a short list. Rami, cool. Viggo, like I was talking about, Green Book is not a bad movie. I Viggo Mortensen's performance was good. It's just I don't see it winning for Best Actor. So, that's who I have winning.
All right. Best Supporting Actress, Amy Adams from Vice, Marina de Tavira for Roma, Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone for The Favorite, Rachel Weisz for The Favorite. So,
I don't know. I think Regina's finally going to get her Oscar this year.
I think Regina's probably going to get it. I think it also helps that Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz are also both from the same film, because they're gonna split some votes.
So it's going to be interesting. But Regina won the Screen Actors Guild. She also won the Golden Globe. So I just, all signs are leading to Regina King winning supporting actress. But could she not? I could see it happening.
Yep. Supporting?
We got Mahershala for Green Book, Adam for Black Klansman, Sam Elliott for A Star Is Born, and Richard Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Sam Rockwell for Vice.
All right, so don't get me wrong. I really, really enjoyed Sam Rockwell's performance in Vice. I thought it was really cool, his little take on W, and it was really funny.
One of the best W performances in film, yeah.
This isn't Saturday Night Live.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
And then for Sam Elliott, I love Sam Elliott. He always plays Sam Elliott, and he's great at it. This is a Lifetime Achievement nomination.
I think it's this is a
thank you, Sam Elliott, for always being there as the mustache cowboy.
I think that's what it's going to be.
It's between Mahershala, Adam, and Richard E. Grant.
You think so?
Yeah. It's between those three. I really don't know who would take it, but I have a feeling Mahershala.
I think Mahershala is going to win again. I think he's going to be a two-time supporting actor, not a winner. Adam Driver was phenomenal. Richard Grant, I thought Sam would be great. Like, no, even though he did play the cowboy, like you said, he plays the cowboy all the damn time. But I thought they were going to actually be like, hey, because you played so well this time.
They really only gave him like one scene to like do any sort of depth. And it was the last scene he was in where it's just him in the pickup truck. Backing out.
I think that scene, in the scene when him and Bradley Cooper get into that fight in the first like 40 minutes of the film, when Lady Gaga's first coming on his tours, was also a good point. But I don't know. Hey, why am I blanking? Anthony Hopkins won for only being in the film for 12 minutes for Silence of the Lambs.
True.
Sam could. It's interesting. This year's supporting actor, like, I can see almost anybody winning, and the way that, again, the Oscars can progress, like, as much as I liked his performance and I don't want him to win, they might just be like, you know, you did a phenomenal job as George W. Might give it to you, Sam.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to see that, but it could.
Next, we have Best Original Screenplay, The Favorite, First Reformed, Green Book, Roma, Vice. Okay, so I have the only one I have a problem with on here is Vice. Yeah. Because Vice's story is so all over the place that when I walked out and I was talking to a friend of mine about it, I was like, was this a film where they just wrote down a bunch of scenes and then they just shot all the scenes and then just cut it together? Or was this like a page one through, you know, page 120, like, simple through line. Like, this was all over the place. I don't get this nomination for screenplay. The other four, I can't argue with any of those. I think they're all good.
I think it'll be between The Favorite and Green. Nah, I don't want Green Book to win, no offense, but The Favorite and Roma.
Yeah, probably.
And I agree with you, advice. I still don't understand why it's there, but besides the point.
And adapted screenplay?
Adaptive screenplay. I'm sorry. I'm trying to find it. It's all over the place. Oh, yeah. There we go. Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Black Klansman, Can You Ever Forgive Me, Bill Street, and A Star Is Born. Yeah, see, this is a stacked, like, list.
Huh. I think Black Klansman.
Okay.
But I also I haven't seen If Bill Street Could Talk yet.
I loved If Bill Street Could Talk. The writing was amazing, was simply amazing. So I want to see if Bill Street wins. Since Barry can't get nominated for Best Director or Best Picture, I think this is where he's going to get his win. Just like how Jordan Peele got his win for Get Out. It was like, yeah, we nominated you for Best Picture, but not Best Director. Here's your win for Best Original. I mean, yeah, Best Adapted Screenplay. There you go. So all I think they're going to do that for Barry.
Do you want to do makeup and costume design or skip those?
No, we can skip those. No offense.
All right. Best cinematography. We have The Favorite.
Yeah.
Never Look Away. Roma, Star is Born, Cold War, Roma.
Roma.
That one's pretty easy.
That was very easy. And then
there was Score? One,
huh?
Score?
No, I thought we talked about Score. Yeah, we did talk about Score.
Oh, yeah, we did Score. Documentary feature. This is the one that I'm most upset about.
Documentary feature?
Documentary feature.
Okay, Free Solo, Hail Country This Morning. Minding the Gap of Fathers and Sons and RGB. Where the hell is Won't You Be My Neighbor? Where the hell is it? Thank you for pulling that out. I didn't even notice that.
This
Where
one, the hell when is I it? Saw this morning, this one had me, whoo, like the way most wow. people get upset when like somebody gets left out of like a best actor nomination. That's how I felt about this best documentary. And usually most people don't care about best they don't documentary care about feature.
Documentaries.
This year?
Wow.
That documentary was...
How dare they?
That documentary is a movie that I felt like everybody, regardless of whether, like people who don't even watch documentaries, I was like, you need to watch this. This will shape you and make you a better person. And Son it was so well done.
Of a gun.
And to leave it off is...
Hurtful. So hurtful. No. Wow. Thank you for pointing that. I didn't even... Wow. You know what? Yeah, I'm hurt. That hurts. That was... No. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That was the best documentary this year. How dare y'all? Okay. You know what?
Yeah, we're going to move on for
before we get upset.
So really quickly, we'll do like some of the little ones because I think there's a few things of note. Best sound mixing, Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, First Man, Roma, Star is Born. I think it's got to go to First Man.
It's going to go to First Man.
Got to go to First Man.
Sound editing, now, Black Panther, yeah. Bohemian Rhapsody, Quiet Place, and Roma.
That one's tough.
A Quiet Place or First Man?
A Quiet Place, First Man. But Roma is really good, too, because there's some scenes in that where it's kind of quiet, but there's some stuff going around where, like, they're in a restaurant, and it's a really quiet, intense, emotional scene, but you still hear, like, the chatter around the restaurant yeah. and the glasses clinking and people walking by, and it's really good, but... It's tough. A Quiet Place and First Man, I think, are the front runners, though.
Yeah, I agree. And then let's do costume design and visual effects to wrap it up. Costume design, Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Black Panther, Favorite, Mary Poppins, and Mary Queen of Scots. Favorite, maybe?
Probably.
Favorite? And then visual effects, we got Avengers, Christopher Robin, First Man, Ready Player One, and Solo. I could see either Ready Player One or Avengers.
Yeah, I would probably lean Ready Player One just because in Avengers there was nothing we hadn't already seen.
I agree. But the achievement in visual effects that Ready Player One gave you, I wholeheartedly believe that Ready Player One should get some nominations. I mean, it should win one for that. At least Steven Spielberg can say, hey, my movie this year won an Academy.
Got something. So that was pretty much all of the main topics. We didn't get into the shorts or anything like that because we don't really cover any of that.
Yeah, I haven't watched any shorts this year. Sorry.
Yeah. Lo siento, but... So we'll get into our next main topic. We're going to talk a little bit about M. Night Shyamalan's newest entry, Glass. We'll start off spoiler free and then dig into it a little bit. So first off, how do you feel about Unbreakable and Split as movies?
So I think Unbreakable is one of M. Night Shyamalan's most underrated films. I love it as a superhero film. Backstory, I didn't watch it until I was in college. And watching mm-hmm. it in college, I appreciated it a lot more than I would have if I would have watched it back in 2000s. Because, you know, I was Spider-Man all over the place, Hulk all over the place. And I was just like, what the hell is this? Some guy just finally got his powers. What? But, yeah, I loved Unbreakable and Split. Amazing performance from James McAvoy. Amazing. I think... It's his better films. I wouldn't say it's his best, but one of his better films. And I loved Split. Loved it. Loved it.
Unbreakable for me. So this is like a huge journey because I've seen all of them in the theaters. Obviously, the middle one was my favorite experience in the theater because it was the secret screening at Fantastic Fest 2016. And M. Night and James McAvoy were there. We didn't know that it was going to be there. And then it was just, I was in the secret screening and all of a sudden it was like, boom, this is Split, you know, over 3 months early. And then at the end, the twist with him tying it back into the Unbreakable universe, which Unbreakable is already like my second favorite M. Night movie behind The Sixth Sense.
Of course.
And so I was like, oh God, now we're going back to David Dunn. We're tying it in. We're giving him like a real villain that he can fight and everything. And I was really jealous because I've met several people who just within the last like 2 years since Split has come out, like they saw Split and then they didn't know the David Dunn like thing. So they went back and watched Unbreakable. They were like, Unbreakable is amazing. And I'm like, yeah, I've been telling you people for almost 20 years that Unbreakable is amazing. Movie. I saw it in theaters with my best friend who I had to keep a secret about Split for 3 months because he didn't go to Fantastic Fest. So I had to keep a secret and then go to the theater with him to watch it and see his face when the twist happened. And then for Glass to come out and the anticipation level. And I'm actually a little jealous of some people who got to see, you know, Split for the first time when the hype came out 2 years ago. And then they were like, oh, God, this ties back into something else. And got to go watch Unbreakable for the first time. And I'm a little bit jealous because, you know, for me, it's been something I've been sitting on for so long. And then Glass comes out. And then so this is the trilogy. And then, so what were your initial thoughts of Glass?
Real quick before I go in my initial thoughts, give you backstory on how I feel about it. So like I said, I watched it when I was in college. So like 2012, 2013 is when I finally watched Unbreakable. And then 2 years later, I went to go see Split. And I remember I was at a movie house in Erie. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to it. And I'm like watching it. And I'm like, okay, this is a phenomenal movie. And like you, I was at the end of the film, and one thing about me sometimes is, like, I can remember scores from films that really touch me, that really, really do touch me. And so I was sitting there, and when Kevin is sitting there talking to himself in his Patricia Hedwig and the Beast talking about, like, oh, we survived those two shots, what we can do, this is amazing. And then it cuts to the cafe scene, and Unbreakable's music starts welding up. And I'm like, I know this music. I know this. And someone was like, what are you talking about? I was like, no, this can't be it. I knew it sounded like Unbreakable. And I was like, this can't be it. And then literally, you know, little close, tense pull-up shot that M. Night Shyamalan does to show David. I was like, oh my God, it's going to be close to Unbreakable. Oh my God. God, I can't wait. I was so excited for 2 years waiting for it. And so my other friends who went were like, yeah, I don't know what the hell this is. So they go back and watch it, and they're like, okay, I understand where the hype is. So for me, this is in hype, like you said, build up for 2 years that I'm just sitting here waiting. Initial thoughts? Disappointed.
Disappointed?
I'm disappointed.
So I've seen it twice. My initial viewing was a mixture of disappointment and like longing. Like I wanted something else.
I wanted something more.
And then coming back to the second time, knowing what was happening and knowing like everything that was there, was I actually enjoyed the ride more because I wasn't as focused on like, okay, when are we going to get this? And then it not happening. And when are we going to get this? So I was more just enjoying the ride. And I did notice that I definitely enjoyed the first 30 minutes.
Yes.
A hell of a lot.
Yes, I agree with you.
And then everything in the hospital, I felt like he could have condensed, like made it shorter, because like all okay. those conversations with Sarah Paulson's doctor character and everything, they were just very drawn out. And I understand, like, it was to, like, make it kind of seem tense or seem like a real doctor talk,
mm-hmm.
where she's just explaining, like, it's just exposition, where it's just people talking to the camera and explaining, yeah. where she's, like, you know, talking about, like, a magician, and then how you're one of those 1% of people who sees every little detail, and da 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 da, and, like, it really sounds like a freaking boring doctor talking to you. But again, it's a boring doctor just talking to you. And you're just like, this guy's going to fight.
Well, see, I would.
And is Glass going to do something? This movie's called Glass. Is he just going to sit in that freaking chair? And he sits there for literally
2x, not doing anything. But I would say this. Going back and rewatching Glass again for a second time, I actually enjoyed the hospital scenes more. And I'll explain why. Like, the thing is one thing that I loved about Unbreakable and Split is how they play with the psyche of the mind, right? And how they play with, hey, you revealing things about your brain or learning things about yourself, and you're starting to realize more about your potential and things of that nature, right? And what I loved about the hospital scenes, where I also do believe that it should have been condensed a little bit, Sarah Paulson is that doctor that is like, hey, I understand that you believe you're this hero. You believe you're this character from a comic book. But think of it this way. If these were just like things that were just happening of events, and your brain is telling you this, that, and a third. And I was like, wow. Like, I guess for me, it's like a idea of like, your brain can tell itself what it wants, and you will take those traits on. And I love that idea that Sarah Paulson gave for all of them.
Oh, yeah. Like, I definitely felt like, and now I think we've both said, like, how we overall feel about the movie. So just for anybody listening, we can't really talk too much more without some spoilers here and there. So just
so you know, we're giving you some spoilers, and then in a few minutes we're gonna go full spoilers.
So yeah, I do really like that idea, because you hear about that kind of stuff all the time, like the mother, when like a child is in danger, all of a sudden, because the brain just goes into a certain way, all and like just that, all of that adrenaline kicks in, and all of a sudden can lift the car,
right?
And then, so, you know, her trying to explain to these people, like, these aren't supernatural gifts, this is your, there's an imbalance in your brain which has you thinking you can do this, so you can do it, but not to the degree
that you think you can think do
you
it.
Are
right.
And there was a point my first time watching that where she was kind of talking me into it, where I was like, was Bruce Willis not really a superhero?
And that was, I think,
And I was like, is the Beast not really
the Beast
supernatural? Yeah. Like, is he just a schizoid?
And see, that's what I loved about the hospital scenes, is because it was like, hey, your mind is telling you this stuff. And the way she explained, I hate to put it this way again, some spoilers are coming out. The way she explained how Kevin took both of those shots in the shotgun, and how, you know, the shotgun has been condensed, the cartridges were old. And I'm just like, wow, what if literally he wasn't the Beast?
And then she was like, I bent those bars by just putting a wrench in it and putting all my weight on it.
And I'm just like, oh, wow. Like, that part of the film, I was like, okay, we're really playing with something here. And I thought we were going to get a payoff, which we will talk about later. But how James did the phenomenal acting in that moment, where like, hey, we're the horde, we're bravo, we're the bravado, running the scenes here and things like that. Then we get knocked down a couple of notches because of David Dunn.
Then you had the two most powerful personalities in the Horde. You had Dennis and Patricia. And Dennis, who was in Split, like, the most, like, serious, like, didn't want to, like, no nonsense. And all of a sudden, he was just like, I don't want to be a part of this. I didn't know all these people were going to die. And, yeah, it sounds like, you know, this isn't a good thing. I want out. And Patricia is like, she's crying.
Right.
When Glass goes in there, she's crying, talking about, like, what if he can't do what
he can do. Right. And that's what I loved about it, because it was like I said, at the beginning of the movie, they're in a space of, we're the kings. And we're the kings and queens, and we're knocking things out. Then, when they find David Dunn, it's more like, oh, how in the hell could somebody come up and, like, say they could beat us? And then you go to that point where it's just like,
maybe it's just because I'm a regular man.
Right. What if we're just regular people? And I'm like,
the only thing with that is I feel like they all of that doubt and stuff, they didn't portray that through David Dunn.
No.
And I feel like that, I don't know if that's just because they know Bruce Willis doesn't like to act anymore. So he was just, they knew he was going to sleepwalk.
But see, here's my thing, and I hate, and I'm not going to say anything bad about you, Bruce, but this is what I was going to say. In his recent films, you could tell he's been phoning it in. You could tell he's doing a paycheck, grab my paycheck, put it in my pocket, and go from his day, right? What I felt with in Glass, he has been the most focused, not the most focused out of all the actors, but this is his most focused point in all of his recent films. But even then, I just felt like they didn't do enough for him. I felt like
the character was written with the knowing that we can't give Bruce Willis too much to do or else he's going to ruin this movie.
But here's the thing, though. Bruce Willis even said it himself that he loved coming back to this, right? Like, he enjoyed Unbreakable, and it's just like, I wanted to see more, and I think he could have done more, or I think he could have gave more, but it's just like M. Night didn't write him anything to do.
The thing with that is, like, they didn't give him any emotion.
No.
Like the point where in the beginning where they have their fight, which is really cool, in the warehouse.
Yeah.
And the Beast is trying to, like, crunch him and can't. And the camera just goes, like, right in front of Bruce Willis's face and just keeps showing him. And the whole time, his face is just like, even in Unbreakable, like, anytime he was, like, exerting any of his, like, power, his strength, he would, like, grunt.
He had emotion with it, yeah.
You know, yell. And this, it was, like, nothing. And then same thing when he, like, broke down the door, his face was just... Or then when they fought the second time in front of the hospital and he was like smashing the Beast into the van, his face was just, and he was just like, and then when he pushed all the policemen into the thing, he was just like, it's for your own safety.
Okay, I see what you mean. I mean, I don't know. I just felt like maybe, I don't know. I just felt like he was more focused in this film. Were there moments where he was just like, yeah. Especially the one thing I really liked about his acting was when him and his son were together and talking or having conversations with each other. Those were his most, like, high moments. The only problem with that was there wasn't enough of it. And side note, I love how they brought the son back from Unbreakable.
And the mom
for Samuel Jackson or Glass, and brought them all back to reprise their roles. Phenomenal. But back, like, that's what I meant. Like, it was just like, you had so much potential. Like, you see the David Dunn that we want to see, and it's literally like you gave him about 10 minutes of, like, just, hey, go act, and then just like, hey, just don't do so much throughout the rest of the film.
Well, and I will admit, like, the first watch, part of my disappointment was the excitement of the overseer coming back and then only getting that for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I was really, really hyped about, okay, what has he been doing these last 19 years? Like going around fighting crime, and now his son is like the Oracle on his headset, like talking him through these missions. And we didn't get much of that. And that's fine. I understand that wasn't the purpose of the story. Like, the purpose of the story was Glass, which the only way to really break down what that means is we have to go, like, full spoiler into how it all breaks down. Yeah. Because while I was really disappointed going into the third act, and my first time, the third act and the ending really, really upset me.
It still does.
The second time, I was like, okay. And I accepted it as, this movie's called Glass. This is the ending that he did. He was the one who did all of this, and it was all for a reason.
I still don't like the ending. And we're going to get into that in a moment. So, again, you have your full spoiler warning. We are about to go deep spoilers into this. If you have not seen Glass, pause this, go watch the film, and come back.
So break it down, like the third act.
So what happens in the third act is, like, she's going to take, basically, I'm going to start from the beginning where Sarah Paulson's like, okay, we're going to take Elijah, we're going to put him and get surgery for his frontal lobe to see if, like, he's actually, like, what he says he is, right? And so we find out at that point, Glass is now all of a sudden, like, working. And we're like, okay, all right. He's been, pretending to be, like, comatose for this past couple of days. Okay, cool. And then he breaks them out. Basically, they have this huge fight in front of the hospital. But it was supposed to be, long story short, his plan was to take them to the biggest building in Philadelphia so they can fight and have the whole world to see. And basically, they, instead of having a big part in the buildings, he has to fight over in front of the hospital because David Dunn is like, no, I'm gonna use my powers to stop you guys. Then it's like you get build up. You're like building up. You're like, okay, we're gonna get this fight that we've been wanting. Okay, they're really gonna hash it out. Then we find out it's, first off, this is where the movie lost me. We find out from David Dunn's son that Elijah is the reason why Kevin's father died. Because Kevin's father was in the same train that Bruce Willis was in when, like, the basic tragedy happened, right? And so I'm like, so you're telling me from mere coincidence, Kevin became Kevin because of Elijah. Huh.
Well, that didn't really bother me because, like I said, my roommate is huge into this movie. So he's already on, like, the theory thing. And so even before we saw the movie, he was already like, yeah, one of the big theories out there is that because Kevin's dad in Split, it was revealed he left on a train and never came back, that he was on the same train as Bruce Willis. And then so I was like, huh, okay.
But see,
then so when that happened, I was like, and there were people in the theater who were like, oh, and I was like, this isn't the twist, because M. Night already knows that so many people have this theory that he's not going to make this the twist. And I feel like he planned it before he even did Split, he planned that.
So in the interviews that he had, he said that he had this plan for 19 years. So mm-hmm. That's why I was like, I get it. He had this already wrote down and everything.
He apparently wanted to put Kevin, the Beast character, in Unbreakable.
He did.
And have Bruce Willis bump into him at the stadium.
Right, he did, but he thought it was
too much.
Yeah, he thought it was too ambitious at the time, which I think Glass was. But besides the point, yeah, don't get me wrong, I don't mind that theory. I guess for me it was like, I hate to say it, I think that was lazy writing. Because I felt like it would have been, I don't know, I felt like it kind of took the importance out of the scene my opinion, because it's like, okay, these guys are fighting and he really wants to, like, basically be a bad guy teaming up. Now you're telling me that that happened for this to happen? I guess you're saying that he's ordaining all of the events, but it's just like, okay, let's put a pin in that, because then it pisses me off about what happens in the next following scene. It's like, yes, the Beast is like, oh, cool. Yeah, thank you for bringing us here, but we can't trust you anymore. And then the Beast basically hits him in some very pivotal parts in his body and literally almost breaks and kills Sam, which he eventually dies from his injuries. And so they're sitting there fighting. And then Anya Taylor goes and talks to the Beast and basically says Kendall Wolf and Crumb's name. And Kevin comes out. And you're like, oh, okay, this is cool. Was that a snipe shot? Oh, they just sniped Kevin. Oh, he's probably about to die from this shot wound. Cool. And, oh, yeah, they throw David Dunn in a big tub of water because, you know, his weakness is water. So he's sitting there struggling. He's weak. He's like, ugh, like, I've been in water. Then all of a sudden, you see a couple of SWAT agents drown him in a puddle of water. I'm sorry. That was the biggest, like, screw you to everybody, right? Because to me, it's like, we've been sitting here watching David Dunn for all these years, and you mean to tell me the way he goes out is in a puddle of water, drowning somebody, like literally some no-name character. If it was Glass, if it was Beast, hell, I would have been okay with it. But a couple of no-names puts his head in the water. You telling me I'm supposed to be okay with that? No, I am not okay with that.
I will say, when I saw it the first time, I was mad. And then after seeing it the second time, and I listened to some other opinions, thinking about it, the way each of those characters died, the whole point of Glass's plan, it was always a suicide mission. He had no plans to go to the buildings. He had absolutely no intention, because from the moment that the doctor told him, I've put 100 of these cameras up in this building to see everything you do, that's when his brain started formulating the plan, because he's the mastermind of, okay, I'm going to make everybody think we're going here, but we're specifically going to go through the basement and fight right out there in front of those cameras. And then I want the Beast to find out that I'm the one that made him. The problem is Bruce Willis's dad revealed it to the Beast too early. Like, he even said it. He was like, not yet. Like, he's playing as if he's in a comic book. He wants this to be like a comic book one shot to where everybody falls. And then it pissed me off that he died in a puddle. But the whole point was that this man, David Dunn, who's super strong, super resilient, can't get sick, can't be hurt, can't be broken. But his one problem is, in his mind, that one day when he was a child, those kids almost drowned him in a pool. And so his one weakness is water. So something as small and insignificant as a puddle can end a man that is that strong and powerful simply because of that one incident is in his mind. Same thing, the Beast, when he is in his right mind and accepting his strength, the Beast is essentially an avenging angel. Like, when you look at it, he's almost outside of murdering all those teenage girls, he's actually kind of an anti-hero.
Yeah,
because the whole point of the Beast is he was created and brought, like, his physical form was brought out from Kevin's weakness of his abuse and everything. So the Beast, right, was brought out to protect Kevin. So the way the Beast looks at it is, I'm here to protect anyone who has suffered a lot.
Right.
That's why he wants to protect Glass, is when he tells him, I've broken 94 bones in my body. He's like, I will protect the broken, you know. And then even when Anya Taylor-Joy, like, hugs him, he's like, I protect Kevin, all of that stuff. So, and then what is his weakness? He goes back to his weaker form, Kevin, and then allows him to get shot. And then Glass's weakness was he got ahead of himself. His plot got revealed before it was supposed to, but in the end, he already had the failsafe. He had already sent out those videos.
And again, I'm not arguing with the poetic ways of them dying, right? I'm not arguing, hey, Kevin dying that way. I don't mind that Glass died that way. It's just the people who execute the executions what's pissed me off. And again, back to your plan with Glass. I get it. Well,
it's that secret organization.
Right. Before we get there, that's where my biggest problem with this whole movie and the whole, then we got to play plot holes things, because that's what bothers me about it. And that's why I was like, the story pissed me off, because it like built to something that goes nowhere. It's like, if Glass had this failsafe and he knew that he was not going to...
His plan was that for them to be martyrs.
Right. His plan was for them to die, right? And he knew that they were going to die, and he knew basically this was a suicide mission. My question was this. If you knew that this was going to happen, why in the hell did you not... Like, I guess my thing is, it's like, why didn't you let everybody else know about this? Like, why you didn't let the people who have been aiding you, I mean, not aiding you, but aiding the anti-hero, I mean, the villain and the hero, hey, there's this secret organization that I think is coming around that might be doing something, right? Just in my personal opinion, I get it that you want the world to know that there's heroes out there, there's super, like, beings out there. But I guess for me, it's like the entire movie, back, like, our whole world is monitored. Like, our entire world is monitored by this time, like, at this point in 2016, 2017, 2018. You could have found footage of them doing that and posted that into the world, right? You could have done that. I just think that you didn't have to kill yourself to expose yourselves. You see what I'm saying? And I understand the poetic way of doing that, but my problem is like, where the story part comes for me is like, yes, it's this Black Clover, like this Clover secret organization that's been knowing the entire time that there's beings out there, and they come out, say it, like, kill, like, not kill, they come out, debunk all of that, or try to change that, and then after they do what they need to do, they go to different cities, right? I get that. Here's where my problem comes in. If you knew who the hell David was, if you knew who the hell Kevin Wendell Crumb was, why, no offense, why in the hell have we...
Well, why have she? That's the thing she said to David Dunn was, "We knew you existed, and unfortunately, it like we weren't gonna come for you, but because the Beast also emerged and you had to go fight him, that's why we had to get involved, because that was their whole like their whole thing as like a society or whatever." Is like, we can't have these people, because if there are heroes out there, they're going to incite villains. If there are villains out there, they're going to incite superheroes. And so we don't play for either side. So we have to keep, but anytime like a hero comes and then a villain shows up, that's when we got to be worried. Because that's when it's escalating.
But that's what happened in 2000 in Unbreakable. It's like... I get that y'all don't want, like I said, I get that, you know, you got to have a hero and villain come together. But let's be honest. Excuse me. Like, Elijah had this plan since the beginning. He killed all those people on the train just so he can get his
opposite. Because that's his whole thing, is he's always had that theory that comic books are based in reality. And he's always been told, no, these don't exist. And he's like, no, I feel like the reason that people came up with these stories, it's based on some sort of truth, but there's this organization that's been squashing it.
But I guess my thing is why not say anything? And for the organization, in my opinion, again, when you see that there's a hero and villain thing going on in the beginning with Unbreakable, why you didn't nip that in the bud 19 years ago? That's just my thing. And my biggest problem was, it's like, you got that twist, and then it was like, oh yeah, just kidding, we're not going to do that twist because we have another twist where actually Elijah wins. And it's like, you did the secret organization part for shock value, and then you were like, okay, just kidding, we're not going to hide all of this, now we're going to expose the whole world. How do I feel about it?
At first, I hated the secret organization. Then I liked it. I thought it was kind of cool. And then my roommate brought up something. So a three-leaf clover, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's normal.
Yeah.
So what does that organization stand for? Normal, regular people. Whereas a four-leaf clover is an abnormality. So a regular thing is a three-leaf clover.
Right.
Basically, it's like mutants and humans.
Right.
We're against them. And then the next thing was, so the whole point of this movie being called Glass was Elijah's plan.
Right.
And him, Elijah's plan basically the entire time. It wasn't even about him being center stage in the movie. Like, he barely had that much screen time. But it was that his plan from the original Unbreakable was that he was trying to convince the world. Like, he was doing these horrible things in order to convince the world that supernatural beings exist among us.
Yeah.
And then so this was his, like, magnus opus. Like, I finally did it. Granted, it was a suicide mission, all that, but this is what it took for me to finally put it out in the open that superhuman beings exist among us and that there's people out there that don't want you to know. It's almost X-Files-like.
So that's what I'm saying. It's like an X-Files episode. I don't mind it, but it's just like, I just felt like he was rushing to make an ending because the thing is, it's like this. I don't know. I can't speak on it from a screenwriter's standpoint, but, like, for me, I felt like there was other ways you could have went about it to make it better. I just felt like, again, you did, like, in my personal opinion, this is how I feel about it overall. As you can tell, I was so disappointed because it's like, it's a sequel to Unbreakable. It's a sequel to Split. Then it's its own movie, and then it's Glass. And it felt like it was doing four movies at once to me in some ways. Like, first 30 minutes, you got Unbreakable. Then you got the Unbreakable Split sequel. Then you got the Split sequel because you're trying to figure out what the hell is going on with Kevin Wendell Crumb, Nia Taylor, trying to get her stuff together and trying to live life without dealing with Kevin. Then you got the fourth movie. Then you got the fourth movie where it's like, okay, are y'all really superheroes? Are y'all really trying to do something? And then you got Glass. And it's just like, for me, that's what I was like, okay, we're trying to do five different storylines and put them into one. Cool. And like I said, you got this roller coaster ride that's coming up. And for it to, I felt like this way. Putting the secret organization in there like that was like putting, like, you're on the Iron Rider, which is like San Antonio Six Flags, where you're going down that huge slope. And it's like, literally, you're about to go on the incline. And it's just like, do-do-do. And it's like, so what was the point of me saying that we're going to go on a 45-degree incline if we're going to go only 20, right? That's where, I guess, my problem was. It's like, I don't mind that his plan succeeded. I don't mind that he exposed, you know, super beings in the world. I don't mind that. And I guess my thing was, I don't mind the clover, like the three-leaf clover, like, organization. My biggest concern is, again, like, if you were going to do it this way, you should have, in my opinion, showed us some kind of snippet about this going on, or, like, don't kill them off with these guys, right? Like, I just felt like, in my personal opinion, I would have them kill each other, clean up the mess, then, like, basically do, like, what everybody else is like, there's no such thing, there's nothing that happened. Then you have this whole exposition of all this, and I'd be like, okay, I understand why she's doing that. Because, it, like, I guess for me, that's how I would have done it. I wouldn't have had the clever guys, okay, snipe Kevin at his weakest point. Or, hey, we're going to kill David in the water. Because it's just like, it's not, I guess for me, it's not impactful enough. It's just more of like a, hey, screw you and your heroes and who you stood for. These are just like whatever. That's where
I mean, guess that's how I felt the first time. And then the second time, because the first time I was mad, I was pissed off. And then the second time, like knowing what was about to happen and then like paying attention to the way each thing happened, it was like when she walks up to David Dunn and like and asks for his hand and then basically tells him. And so like he knows you're a superhero and I had 3 days to convince you otherwise. And like, I'm sorry, like I couldn't convince you. And then goes to Elijah and says, like, you're dying, but like rest easy in knowing that you were right. You were right. And then but then it was like a F you, because then it was like, okay, everything's done, they're all dead, the world doesn't know. And then she goes to her little restaurant and is like, I'm gonna go to the next city and I'm gonna do the same thing. I'm gonna try to rehabilitate these people and tell them they're not superheroes. If I can't, then we do the surgery on them and then we move on. And she's like, nothing was exposed, da da da. And so they're like, okay, good, business as usual. And then when the videos go out, and then, well, the cool thing was she was at the comic book store, and then that was when she realized she got played by Elijah.
That's another thing. Why did she go to a bookstore instead? I mean, comic book store instead of leaving?
Because the thing is, I think she actually, even though her job is to like talk these people out of what they are,
yeah,
and then eventually, if they don't get talked out of it, basically lobotomize them to a certain extent, that she actually like
admires them. If that's the case, show me that she admires them. Like, don't throw a 2-minute scene.
Well, I think the fact that she went up to David Dunn and like goes to him and puts her hand out and was like, did I convince you? And then he's still fighting it, and she's like, okay, well, like, you're a superhero. And then goes to Elijah. And she even tells him at one point, while he's still playing stupid, like, you have the mind, you know, I would love to, like, she's, like, admiring the fact that he has this, like, crazy intelligence. And then she's almost seems like she is sad that they're gonna have to lobotomize him. And then even when she wakes him up abruptly, not knowing that he took the piece out of the machine, and she's like, I'm sorry, Elijah, like, I didn't want to have to do this. The video came out that you were duping us. And then before he goes down, she's even like, you know, you're going to be okay, my friend. Like, she doesn't want to hurt these people. She believes, I think, deep down that they're amazing people. But because even Kevin, like, every time, like, he's trying to like jump at her and the light's flashing and he's like goes into pain because he's switching. And eventually, finally, she's like, young man, like, stop. Like, you're only hurting yourself.
His motion and all that crap. Yeah.
Because those are the few times she actually shows emotion. Because when she's just in the like sessions talking to him, she's like just monotone and everything. But when she, like, even when they have to like drown David with the water hoses, and she goes into the room afterwards because he got upset because he found out the beast was across the hall, and so he got upset, so they flooded him. And she was like, David, like, I don't take pleasure in doing any of this. Like, you know, there's something in your mind wrong, and I really don't enjoy it. Like, I think she feels for these people. But again, Is it what it could have been? No.
I guess that's my biggest thing. It's like I get all of the points. Now that you explain that more, I can understand why she would go into comics, but it's just I felt underwhelmed. I really still feel underwhelmed. And like I said, I watched it a second time and I was like, go in more positive. Go in thinking that it's not as bad. And I still came out underwhelmed. I still felt like it could have been better. And so that's why I gave it a 2.5 out of 5. It's not as bad as, you know, The Happening, like The Last Airbender and After Earth. But it's just, I just still felt like I was cheated in a sense. I felt like how I felt with Signs. I felt like I got cheated out of an ending. That's my only issue. Like I was talking about, there's snippets of brilliance in this movie. Like, very beautiful snippets of brilliance. Especially how he does some, like, not POV shots, but like some, like, close-up angles when they're fighting. Or when he's showing, spatial segments of, or spatial shots of how, like, David Dunn feels in a home, how he felt when, or how all the characters feel like when they're in the rooms. The colors,
amazing. The colors are amazing.
Like, the color schemes and everything was amazing. There's signs of M. Night being M. Night, and then there were signs of Shyamalan and Ding Dong. And it's like, I guess those moments overshadow his brilliant moments, and I guess that's why I was so disappointed. And that's why I think I gave it a 2.5 out of 5.
I had it at a 3. I thought it was enjoyable enough, but obviously there were plenty of points that could have been better. It wasn't what I was wanting, but I think after thinking on it and then again watching it that second time, I do understand what he was going for. And then also knowing that, like, Disney, like Buena Vista, offered to pay for the whole thing, and the fact that he's had this story for 19 years and he wanted to keep it exactly as he had it back then. So he, you know, put his house up,
right,
to where, like, he just funded it just like he did The Visit. He just paid for it himself in the hopes that it would do well. I do respect him as an artist, because that does show me a lot. Because for the longest time, with things like The Happening and The Last Airbender, oh, God, and After Earth, he was literally just taking paychecks and writing stupid twists. And I do feel like this was what he wanted. Was it what I wanted? No. But I do feel it was legitimate that this was what he's been wanting to do for 19 years.
Yeah, for almost 2 decades. And that's why I was like,
so I respect the artist.
That's what I'm saying. I respect that he had this thought. He's been having these ideas for decades, right? I respect that. Do I agree with it? I don't have to agree with it, but I can respect him for that. And that's why I was like, this isn't a terrible movie. I would not put this in his upper, like, in his repertoire of all his terrible films.
It's not there, but it's also not with
Unbreakable, Sixth Sense, you know, it's not there. But I will definitely say, like, is it rewatchable? Yeah, it's rewatchable. Would I pop it in? Yeah. Would I watch the last act? Maybe everything besides the last 10 minutes. But other than that, like, it was still a good movie. I would watch it again, because, like I said, there's moments of brilliance in this film. Like, I enjoyed it. I'm gonna buy it when it comes out, because I want to get all three movies together. As a fan of the franchise, of the trilogy, not franchise, of the trilogy, I was just a tad bit upset. Just a tad.
Alrighty then, folks. That'll wrap it up for our latest episode of Matinee Talk. Be sure to check everything out at Stage 3 Entertainment on YouTube and Instagram. Julian, where can the kids find you?
You can find me on Instagram and my Twitter handle at Julian V. Owens. That is with an E in it, Julian, not an A. And then, Johnny, where they can find you?
I can be found at Johnny the Wonder on Twitter and Instagram.
All right.
On that note, we will see y'all in 2 weeks.
All right, guys. Y'all enjoy your 2 weeks. See y'all then.